Hello, everyone, and welcome to the One Board Podcast. I am Rick White, coming to you from Atlanta, Georgia, and coming to you from one of the moons orbiting Jupiter, it is Ryan Gutowski. Ryan, how are you?
Yes, the weather here is amazing. It is 190 degrees.
Except at nighttime, what happens?
At nighttime, the moon wolves come out and eat all the little people.
I hate it when the moon wolves come out. Have you seen the campaign for the Northern Alabama baseball team that's trying to name their minor league team?
No.
So there is a team. You know, this has become a thing with minor league baseball, which is what board gamers want to hear about on this podcast. Yeah. But it's trying to give slightly ridiculous names to their teams.
Yeah.
For instance, Macon, where I grew up, just named their team the Macon Bacon, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And they recently played the Savannah Bananas. The team names are amazing, and they're kind of centric to the idea that Huntsville's up there, and there's kind of a, you know, NASA-based thing.
Yeah.
But my favorite option there is the Moon Possums. That would be the greatest. I would buy a Moon Possums hat, no doubt.
I would buy a Moon Possums jersey. Like,
yes.
What team are you rooting for? The Moon Possums? And maybe, like, it's the moon. I see the logo already. It's like the moon, but there's like a possum inside of it, almost like curled up inside of it. Like, hey, how you doing? Like, real creepy.
That's how possums talk.
The possum's like, hey, how you doing? I'm gonna eat your chickens. Just like that.
I hate it when that happens.
For all our listeners who are possums, I'm sorry if that's an unfair characterization, but
my aunt's a possum.
My aunt's a possum. Yeah.
So, Ryan, it's been a little bit since you and I have gotten to talk about the games that we've been playing. We don't just buy them. So what are some of the games that you've been playing lately?
Man, we've been playing a lot of games. If you catch What You Playing Wednesday on Facebook.com/OneBoardFamily, we talk about some of those games. But if you don't, then we're going to talk about more of those games. I don't know, man. Charterstone really has us enamored, I think. Real quick, what Charterstone is. Jamie Stegmeier of Stonemeyer Games created this game. It's a legacy game. So you play it over the course of 12 games, and you're encouraged to play with the same people, even though there's mechanics. I mean, there's like things that you can drop in and drop out players. We didn't even read that section. So it's myself and Aaron and Kendall and Bob are playing the game. And so we have had so much fun with this game. In fact, it's our 10-year-old Kendall who asks every day, when are we playing Charterstone? When are we playing Charterstone? When are we playing Charterstone? It's a worker placement game. And as you play the game evolves and the map fills out and you have stickers that go onto the board and you name towns and different things happen. There are winners and losers after each game. There's perks for everybody. There's so much fun to be had when you're unlocking stuff that at the end of each game, you're like, oh man, guys, we have got to fit in another game. Like, it's so much fun. I think Charterstone is in my top 10 games of all time now. I know, after two plays, and I know there's so much more to get, but I think I'm enjoying the simplistic mechanics. I'm enjoying the way the game fleshes itself out. I'm enjoying the player interactions, because there's a little bit here and there where you're interacting with each other. But then when you unlock something, it's this rush of there's something new coming. And I really, really enjoy that. And I think because I haven't played Pandemic Legacy, I haven't had that experience before. We played Risk Legacy a little, but I don't think it was this visceral, you know?
Right.
So does that sound like something that Pandemic Legacy gives you? Or is this I don't know.
I would say so. I mean, it's definitely, I think Pandemic Legacy has more of a feeling of dread to it because, but it's a good feeling in that, like, you're wondering what challenge is the game going to throw at us next?
Yeah.
And so, like, you're not necessarily happy, but you're happy that you're going to get to do something else in the game.
Gotcha.
And so it builds on itself really well. I think after you guys finish up Charterstone again, Pandemic Legacy would be a good one to try out.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe Season 2 is something that me, you, and Bob, and, you know, maybe Aaron or Kendall, since Kendall's always down for a game, maybe we all sit down and try to play through some of that.
That would be really fun, man. That's something, this is our first, like, legacy game that we've really connected with, and I love Charterstone so far. And so we're even trying to figure out when's the next time we can fit in a quick game, because it's definitely become something that has consumed us. After our first game, I contacted Bob at work and I was like, have you stopped thinking about Charterstone today? And he was like, no, I haven't. I was like, we have to play one more game tonight. And so it's a really good game. Like, and I would even encourage, I would say if you've got kids who are in that 10 plus range, and they understand game mechanics, Charterstone, I don't think Emily would enjoy this game, but I almost want to play Charterstone again, because you can play it twice through. There's another side to the board, and you can buy a recharge pack for about $15 to reset everything. So you can play it a second time. I almost want to replay this game with Josiah, myself, Aaron, and Kendall. And if Emily could jump in and jump out, that might work. But I almost want this to be a family game experience that we go through again. I don't know, man. It's really good. And even in that, there is some frustration. The rules do not explain what they need to explain, and there's too much ambiguity at times. But I'm going to say, if you're okay with looking up frequently asked questions and jumping into a Facebook group to ask questions, they have an amazing support group on Facebook that you can jump into. It's a private group. And I got questions answered as we were playing the game and as soon as we finished.
Awesome.
So if you're okay with that, it's a little frustrating at first. Like, where do I find this information? And honestly, we started game two not knowing specific things and not setting it up correctly, but now we're in good shape, you know?
Sweet.
So that's the biggest criticism of the game, that there's some struggle through the rules. But I mean, I don't know. It is what it is. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Legacy game is, I think, a great idea if you've got especially a committed gaming group.
Yeah.
And, you know, it also kind of, if part of your struggle is figuring out what to play every week, giving yourselves like a campaign so that you know, like, for the next few weeks, we're going to play this every time. And when it's going to be enjoyable every time and something that you're looking forward to, it's kind of like Dungeons and Dragons, like when you've got those groups that know they're going to come in and play a campaign together and stuff like that. It's kind of got that element where it's something that you look forward to, a gameplay experience that you are familiar with. You're not going to have to explain rules every time in a way, but like you're all learning rules together for new components that show up.
Yep.
So it gives you that same feeling without taking all the time to learn a whole new set of rules. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan, I've been playing Medieval Academy. Now, this game is one that I picked up at Origins from Iello, however you say it. But they had mentioned that they were thinking of not distributing it anymore. And so they had it on a deep discount, so I picked up a copy. And I had heard of it, and I had almost picked it up a couple of times, but never done really any investigation into what it was actually about.
No.
I just knew that people liked it. So I picked it up, and I played it two times this past week. I played it when we went on a math retreat. And so all the math teachers from our school went up to a cabin, and we started the whole thing by playing board games. And I broke this out and hadn't even punched it or anything and explained it. And it plays over six rounds. And by the second one of the teachers was standing up saying, "I love this game." So that was really exciting. Basically, you are a medieval knight trying to become the most chivalrous, the most dashing, the best knight that there is. And so there are seven different boards out in front of you, and all of you place a circular marker in the corner of the board at the start place. And then you take a deck of cards, give everybody five of them, and then you do some card drafting. What most people would be familiar with that is like a Seven Wonders or Sushi Go, where you pick one of the cards from your hand, put it down, and then pass the rest to either your right or your left, depending on what round it is. And then you keep doing that until you've gotten rid of all the cards, and now you've got five cards face down in front of you. Mm-hmm. You then take those, and one player at a time, starting with the first player, you play those cards, and those cards have an image on them that corresponds to one of the seven boards that are out in front of you, and they have a number on them. I think it's 2 to 5. So when you play that card, you move that many spots forward on the board for that particular that matches that particular card. And so there's some strategy as to when you play each card, because if you tie, there are no ties. If you're on the same space as another one, as another player, if you're on top, if you were the last person to move into that space, you are ahead of that person. Mm-hmm. So kind of timing your card play is important, and making sure that you don't lose points in some areas by, you kind of have to not be a focus on just one area. You kind of have to be a jack of all trades. But the different boards can impact, like, the first board adds another level of strategy, because the first one that you score at the end of each round allows you to move up a certain number of spaces on any board out there. So, like, maybe somebody plays a card at the last minute and they're like, haha, I've got first place for this board. And you're like, oh, you think that. And then you use that board's power to move in front of them. So that's a thing that you can do. Some of them just give you points. Others, if you are in last place for that board, you lose points. And then there are some others that, like, they only score at the end of the game. There's one that only scores at the middle and end of the game, and it gives you points if you get to halfway or all the way on that board. It gives you a whole bunch of points if you reach those areas. It's not really a competition. But what this game turned into was, for the teacher that really loved it, she very much enjoyed the take that element of mm-hmm. the game, because she was able to play a card right at the end and pass. It turned out to be me every time, and take more points than she was going to have otherwise. And so there's kind of little rivalries that can build up, which seem to fit well in the theme. There really is a good hand management element. I think it's one that it probably works better the second time you play, because you get a full grasp of all the rules. I think some people were missing one here and there. But then even better is that all of these boards have an advanced other side. So all seven of them can flip over and be an advanced version of themselves. And so you can play in different ways and kind of mix and match some of the advanced elements to have a different kind of setup.
That's cool. That's really good. I've seen this game, but I've never played it, and that's really cool. I'm so glad you picked up, when we were at Origins, you picked up so many great games that they're choosing not to reprint, and I wonder if they're going to show up somewhere else or in another format, because it sounds like something that should continue. So
definitely. I believe Medieval Academy is one that is very family accessible.
Yeah.
I think if I brought it over to your house, you know, I think Kendall would love this game. I think it's just, the art is all really cool too. It's kind of cartoony, just really fun. I really like this game. I don't think it's like a top 10 for me, but it's one that I think I could break out and teach, and people learn it quickly, and it's the same actions each turn, but the strategy and how you play it will change depending on the rounds. And then one other game that I just have to throw out there, because he told me I have to. I made a new gaming friend named Mondo, which is a really cool name. And he and I have talked about kind of getting a gaming group together here in Clarkston. But we played games together for the first time this past Wednesday, and we played the game Macroscope, which I discovered at Atlanta Game Fest in May. And Macroscope involves, it's an image identity game. You've got this cool contraption that they've made out of cardboard that has 12 holes in it that are covered with little discs. Yeah. You roll dice that match each of the discs has a number 1 through 6. And so the dice tell you which ones you can remove. And your job is to guess what's underneath there. And there are big stakes, like you lose as However many holes are still covered is how many points that guess is worth, and you win or lose that many. So you can't just randomly guess. It does need to be house ruled a little bit, and I discovered that on the back of the rules, a variant that I think I'm going to try next time. But it was still pretty fun, and then we were playing, and we were all doing very poorly because we kept guessing quickly to try to get a bunch of points, and we were always wrong. But at the end of the game, Mondo had no points, and he decided to guess on like something being a pear. It did not look like a pear at all. And so another player who needed to get points to pass me and Sarah, who were tied with the most of them at that moment, guessed. And in order to guess, you have to give two to the person whose turn it is. So Mondo had two jewels. He guessed, and he was right. So he went from, and with Sarah and I only had 10, so Mondo, with his guess, pulled off the victory there at the end.
That's really cool.
It's really basic, and like, you're not going to get excited about it, but I think it's a really good one for kids to get, like, younger kids, because, you know, to get involved. And the variant, I think, allows everybody to get a guess in, which I think is actually a better approach that we'll be using in the future. But that's a game that I think it's not super available, but if people want to check that out and get a copy, you can get it on Amazon. Well, I think would work for families.
I think that's one we'll probably need to review in the future, because it's one that you've talked about multiple times, and seeing it, we actually saw it at Origins. They had it set up, and I saw it at one of the booths. So that's really cool, man. Looking forward to hearing more about that on oneboardfamily.com. We have got an interview for you guys. Rick is a superstar, and he knows people like Alan Girding of Tuesday Night Gaming. And so that's really, really cool. And we were able to get an interview with Alan about some of the games that they are creating and the podcast, and had a lot of fun. So we are going to see you in this interview on the other side of this break.
All right, everyone, welcome back. We are here with Alan Girding of Tuesday Night Games, and that's part of the Tuesday Night Podcast is also included in there, a podcast that I love and listen to all the time. So, Alan, welcome.
Hey, what's going on, Sir Rick?
Yes, well, hopefully soon. And we can talk
later. Oh, my goodness. I haven't even released that episode yet. Plot spoiler.
Oh, snap.
Oh,
well,
shoot.
You know, maybe that can be... That can be a secret for those that are listening out, that stalk you, essentially. Right. They can find out more about it. Alan, we're here talking to you today about a Kickstarter that you guys just wrapped up, but that is still available for pre-order.
That's right, sir.
And that is That's Not Lemonade. Hmm. Now, on your show, you guys do the wonderful elevator pitches. And I was going to challenge you to an elevator pitch of your game. Is that okay?
That's sure. I'm unprepared, but that's part of the deal. Let's do it.
That's how those work. And I also learned from a recent podcast how much you actually hate doing these things.
I think they're okay. I like doing them. Sean hates them. Our original host, SBJ, loathes them. Because they're hard. They're hard. So they're legit. We are not like practicing at all. And that's why some of the times they're just so bad. So bad.
So my character for you to embody here, given that we're a family podcast, I want you to be a beat cop who often uses foul language, but that has been called in to a school to give a presentation and is trying to usually unsuccessfully clean up his act for the children.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're talking about, you've got kindergartners and first graders.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. I'm giving you the essence of That's Not Lemonade in just 1 minute. Is that correct?
That sounds good to me.
Who's dinging me? Is it going to be Rick or Ryan? Who's doing it?
I will ding you. Are you ready?
Ding me, Rick.
Ding!
Listen here, you meat chops. It's Officer Ding over here. And what I want you to know is be careful out there, because there's lemonade that may not be lemonade. What you gotta do is press your luck, use your noggins, and make sure that you keep on hitting cards because you want to get lemons. But if you hit too much, you may get something that's not lemonade. And that's not good, because then I'm going to have to take you down, put you in handcuffs, and kick you out of there, because that's disgusting. And it's pretty good idea to play this game over here, because it's an open table game. And you can come, you can go, it don't matter too much, because it doesn't change the game. Come whenever you want. Kids, get out there and drink your lemonade, but be careful there, and I won't have to bust ya. Watch that, out, chumps.
That was amazing.
That's good.
Very well executed.
I hate it so much. I'm so
So, So That's Not Lemonade did wrap up on Kickstarter. We actually did a preview of it on our YouTube channel while we were out there at Origins and got to meet you.
I remember. It is very good. Nice stuff. Thank you.
Yeah. And you know, it was a really fun. I do love that element of it being a game that anybody can come up and start playing. And like you said, pressure luck game. You know, you're playing lemonade cards, but sometimes it's not lemonade. And people can kind of go in and go out as they please. How did you guys come up with this idea for that?
It wasn't us. It was Matt Fantastic. So this is Matt Fantastic's That's Not Lemonade. He originally called it You Mad Bro. And the brilliance of the game is how stupid simple it is. Because you just keep on going around and around the table and you either hit or you pass. So it's just like blackjack, except once you hit, it's the next player's turn and then the turn after that. And just keeps going around. And the cool thing is, if you win, meaning you have the most lemons at the end of the round without drawing one of the four That's Not Lemonade cards, you win a lemon card from the small 18-card deck. So that means the next round is even more intense because there's fewer lemon cards in those 18 cards, now 17 cards, but there's just as many That's Not Lemonade cards. So it's so simple, stupid. But at the same time, we call it elegant because on your turn, all you have to do is say hit or pass. But I'm amazed at how much thought and card counting and tension goes into people's turns. But it was that. It's Matt Fantastic. He came up with it. It was originally called You Mad Bro, where it was Cthulhu themed. Cthulhu rises off of the Jersey Shore. But because it's the Jersey Shore, Cthulhu instantly died of pollution. And so now the Jersey boys have to dare each other to go ahead and grab tentacles off of Cthulhu, but you have to be careful because you can go mad, bro. So instead of That's Not Lemonade cards, it was You Mad Bro cards. And instead of lemons, it was tentacles. Exact same game with very few minor, obviously theme change, but very few minor other mechanical changes between that and the one that is now published and will be available at Gen Con. What?
Sweet.
Nice. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, and I love, you know, it is a simple game. So, I mean, but I've seen simple games and people will be like, Kickstarter, $35. And you're like, no. But this is a very affordable game that you guys have put out here for us. $12 now for the pre-order, and it was $10 for the Kickstarter, correct?
That is correct, sir. Yeah, absolutely, Sam.
Awesome. So it's coming out Gen Con, and then for those that maybe can't make it out there, when are the pre-orders and the Kickstarters going to be shipping?
There are, I mean, I don't want people to quote me on this because people will rake you over the coals.
Oh, yeah. If you say a date right now and you don't make it, you might be murdered.
So this is one of the fascinating things that I think a lot of people don't take into account when it comes to publishing board games, tabletop games, is the fulfillment, even more so than the shipping. And the fulfillment is when they put it on a boat and it has to go across the ocean, but so many things can happen, like storms, and pirates. It's like a freaking game of the Tales of Arabian Nights. Customs holds them up. But if everything goes as planned, they should have them within August. But that's as if it's as smooth as butter. How are we going to have them at Gen Con? And how are our backers going to be able to pick them up at Gen Con? because just side note, we're not going to make the mistake where we're selling them before our backers can get them, because a big no-no.
They'll get you.
Yeah. So you, if you backed, you can get it at Gen Con. The way we can do that, and this is the way that most companies do it, is we pay a lot of money to have it airshipped and dropped into Gen Con.
Yes.
Parachute just, style.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's an exaggeration, but yeah. So we pay to have it flown, and it's a smaller run because it's just the amount that we can get.
They open up the roof, and the parachute comes down just holding that box of cards. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty amazing. We get celebrities usually that rappel off of the helicopter, and they throw it out like confetti.
So, it's always crazy to think about, you know, we live in the age of, you know, 2-day prime shipping for Amazon, and then thinking through like, oh, well, there's still boats that have to carry things. Like when you have a big pallet of games, it's going to be on a boat for a while. That's how things work. I'm glad to hear that. You know, I back the game. I'm excited to get my hands on it.
Thank you very much.
Try it out with my students. I'm sure they're going to love it. I did also want to give you a chance to talk about a couple other of your games from Tuesday Night Games. But I, in asking you to talk about it, am going to make it about myself first. So Two Rooms and a Boom, I have actually played with my students as a deduction game, and they really liked it. It kind of is that hidden role game, but has a much more of a player interaction element, in my opinion, than like a Resistance might. And that was that the first game you guys put out?
That is, yeah. And that was designed by myself and my business partner, Sean McCoy. So that was all us. In fact, Sean did the art. I did all the rules writing, etc. I mean, we had editors, of course, so shout out to them. But yeah, it was a 2-man project with lots of support from the community. So much appreciated to them. But yeah, that's us.
Awesome. And what would you say, you know, how do you approach games differently? You know, obviously Two Rooms and a Boom was yours first. Like, how does it feel different when you're starting to Kickstarter launch some game that somebody else has developed?
Well, it's a tough comparison because Two Rooms and a Boom was our first game ever. So it was also our first game Kickstarter ever. And therefore, there was a lot of tension. We had no idea how well it would do. And we were asking for $10,000, and that's what we needed. And we made $102,000, and we met our $10,000, I think within like 30 minutes or something like that.
Nice.
Man.
So we really underestimated how well we had marketed the game, because for almost 2 years, we had been taking it to the conventions and playing it with the werewolf groups. So there'd be a whole bunch of people playing it. And this is the genius behind Two Rooms and a Boom, is it plays 6 to 30 players in just 10 minutes, which means that's a lot of players to cycle through, which means it's a self-marketing game galore. And I'm not even sure if I should say this. Like, we sell more copies now than we did last year and the year before that.
What?
So it's like a boulder gaining momentum, which makes sense because if just one group plays it, that's like 30 people playing the game. So
right.
if just one of those people takes it and they play with a different group, well, that's 30 more or 29 more, whatever. But that's the cool thing about Two Rooms and a Boom, is that it's such an easy entry and it doesn't have that competitive feel. It feels like a cooperative game since it's a team game, because even if you lose, you spent the entire time trying to find your teammate. So anyway, your original question was Kickstarter and what's the difference between Two Rooms and a Boom. We had no idea. World Championship Russian Roulette being our second one, we had anticipated similar results to Two Rooms and a Boom. Now, World Championship Russian Roulette also funded in the first day, and it did well. I think it was something like 70,000. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember offhand. And maybe I'm way off. I should be looking this up as I'm telling you. But the weird...
You don't have these numbers tattooed on your arm? Come on.
I don't. I'm so sorry.
One board podcast?
The funny thing was is that we learned then, that's when we really learned how much of Lightning in a Bottle, Two Rooms and a Boom was, because so many people really loved that genre of game, and so many people had played it that there was a big buzz about it before the Kickstarter hit. with World Championship Russian Roulette, we did almost no marketing, and we did even less marketing for That's Not Lemonade. So the big difference is we're kind of getting lazier and lazier, but the games do okay, but just not as well. For instance, Necroboomicon was our first expansion to Two Rooms in a Boom, and it did the best by far. Just a $5 game, and yet it brought in so much more money that it's... It made us realize, like, oh yeah, Two Rooms in a Boom. That's a big deal compared to a lot of other games. And that's not to dismiss, obviously, the value of Anthony Birch's World Championship Russian Roulette, Matt Fantastic, That's Not Lemonade. It's just, I think, scratches an itch that nothing else was really scratching before it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've greatly enjoyed it, and it's awesome. So, I mean, I can definitely understand. Now, your games kind of are geared towards easy entry into, you know, gameplay, and quick, you know, joining in of anybody and kind of larger groups, I guess, with
yes.
Two Rooms in a Boom. What about you? What kind of games can we often find you playing? I mean, I know you're probably demoing these so many times that the rules play in your sleep, but if you've got free choice, what is it that you're wanting to play?
I'm pretty loose when it comes to my games. I'll play pretty much anything, but I really do love those easy entry games. The name of our company is Tuesday Night Games, spelled with a K, but the reason is that every Tuesday night, I have a gathering of friends at my house, and I've been doing that for 2 decades. So when I made the company with Sean, we thought, oh, Tuesday Night Games, because every Tuesday night, you have that game night. And because I've hosted so many game nights, what I found is that I really love games that are easy and fun to host. So that if someone new shows up or someone has to leave early, it doesn't just ruin the whole night because now we have to find different games based upon how many people are there. And that's why That's Not Lemonade and World Championship Russian Roulette both are open table games where you can come and go in the middle of a game and it doesn't stop the play for everybody else. So Two Rooms in a Boom doesn't have that open table game structure. By the way, that's a term we coined, so I'm not sure if that's going to catch on. We're hoping it does. But
Trademark.
Open table game. Tuesday night games. But with Two Rooms in a Boom, the games last 10, 15 minutes, and they play so many players that usually what people do is they show up and say, what's this? What's going on? And you just say, oh, well, it's two teams that are mixed up between two rooms, and everyone's trying to figure out who everyone is and trying to get the President and Bobby together. And like, oh, I want in. And by the time they start figuring it out, then they're in the next game. Anyway, so I really like those easy-to-host games. I also like... I should say what I don't like are games that make people feel worse when they're done than when they start. So I'm not a huge fan of take that games. I'm a big proponent of game theory, and I understand psychologically people have loss aversion. Like, it's way better to give everyone else a reward that you didn't get than it is to punish one player. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So there's certain games that are designed to cause contention and arguments between players, and you can have great times with those games as long as your group is full of great sports and good attitudes. But sometimes even good people have bad days, and those bad attitudes come out, and now you feel like you need to take a bath after you've played the game.
Right, right. Everyone is uncomfortable now.
Exactly. No one wins. No one wins.
Yes, we're all sad.
I can name specific games, but I feel that in itself is almost...
No, I think, everybody had that game pop into their brain. Yeah. But, yeah. No, that definitely makes sense. And so if beyond your own games, is there a game you would want to, like, tell our listeners, hey, you should check this out for a game that does meet your criteria for, like, welcoming in people pretty well?
Right away, first thing that popped into my mind was the cooperative version of Monikers. Monikers is a great selected take, I should say curated take, on the game Celebrities or Fishbowl. There's another game, what is it called? I think it's called Time's Up. And And so Monikers is a very curated deck of those cards, and they have plenty of expansions. Shut Up and Sit Down contributed an expansion to that, and a lot of people don't realize you can play that cooperatively. But if you get that game and you turn to the back of the rule book, self-promotion time. It says, hey, cooperative rules by Alan Girding, and this makes it so that everybody's playing at the same time and everyone's working as a team against the clock. And it is by far, hands down, the game that hits the table the most throughout all these years. In fact, it's rare that we have a game night where at least one person doesn't at least request it. And so most of the time, we acquiesce and we end up playing monikers because it's really quick, it's short, and everyone feels like they now have a tighter relationship because we have inside jokes built around this game called monikers.
Definitely. Awesome. Well, Alan, thank you so much for joining us. But before we go, I did want you to get a chance to talk about your podcast and the awesome things you guys are doing over there.
Oh, well, it's a good time. Tuesday Night Podcast, we try to release an episode every Tuesday night, so it's a weekly show. And it's all about the stories we make while playing the games we love on, around, and under the gaming table is basically our line that we say. And it really is about the stories. We try to have at least one good story every episode. Sometimes those stories come from our knaves, our listeners, as we call them, knaves, and they'll send in their own stories, which we publish, and we call that the Knave Tonight submission, because then we have a knighting ceremony and knight knaves that submit things. Also, we get a lot of emails every week, and as the show grows in popularity, we're getting more and more emails, and that really, in many episodes, directs the conversation. And it seems that the questions that a lot of knaves ask have to do about current controversial affairs within the gaming industry. And that isn't necessarily a choice of ours, but apparently if that's what our audience wants, that's what we keep on talking about. And I think it's somewhat hilarious slash serious that we're not really experts. I mean, I'm a psychology professor, so I can tell you some research I found about some social phenom. But when it comes to a lot of this stuff, I don't know. And so it's just two game designers who own a publishing company and or a guest that we have within the tabletop gaming world just trying to talk about what the hell's going on. So that's the show. And so I guess my pitch is, even if you're not really into tabletop games, you definitely shouldn't listen to our show if you're looking for reviews or for the hotness or if you want someone to talk about the latest and greatest game. We will talk about those things and occasionally, but our main goal really is, what is the story that happened around the table that's bringing people together?
That's awesome.
It's very cool.
Yeah, well, thank you so much again for joining us. And listeners, if you want to check out that podcast, Tuesday Night Podcast, spelled with a K, or spelled with a K. That would be my best attempt there.
I love it. Yeah.
And yeah, look for that wherever you find podcasts. Thank you so much, Alan.
No problem. Let me give a soft pitch for our website where you can find everything we've already talked about. TuesdayNightGames.com, spelled with a K. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You guys are awesome. This is fun. That was harmless.
And we're back. So, Ryan, this week, we often talk about games, you know, when we're talking about what we've been playing, but we haven't done a full in-depth review of a game on the podcast in a while, and we wanted to kind of get back into that. So, this week, we're going to talk about Megaland. What you need to think about are games like Near and Far and Above and Below. It's kind of in that same style by the same creator. Mm-hmm. And Ryan, you were able to get us a copy at Origins through the kindness of its creator. But we wanted to talk about that today. So kind of give us a quick introduction of Megaland.
Yeah, so Megaland is a creation from Red Raven Games, which is Ryan and Mallory Lockett. Ryan writes and does the art and game production and publishes all his own games through Red Raven. And I love Above and Below. We just recently bought Near and Far. We've played Islebound. Like, there's all these great games. I haven't played it, but Empires of the Void 1 and 2. There's so many great games that Red Raven produces. And Megaland is another great one. I think this was a hit, especially for our family. In Megaland, you are in this digital world. You're in this video game world called Megaland. Everybody picks one of five players, and you've got, similar to some of these other games, you've got odd creatures, like this old man who's obsessed with gems, apparently, because he's, like, drooling and lusting after this gem, which is hilarious. You've got a cat person, you've got a frog person, you've got a guy and a girl. There's these really cool, fun characters, and you pick one of these, and each game you actually go out into Megaland, retrieve treasure, and it's a pressure luck game, and bring the treasure back home in order to purchase buildings from the center of the table. So
right now, a lot of comparisons have been made to the game Machikoro, which we haven't actually talked a lot about, but involves rolling dice, and you get certain abilities based on buildings that you have collected. And for those that might know Machikoro, and this might be a good kind of relationship for them to see, how would you describe this relating to Machikoro? And would you say that it's similar to any other games?
Yeah, so it is similar in the way that you've got these buildings, and the buildings give you perks, and you get these perks each turn. What I like about Megaland is that you actually, on the cards, you've got, like, some of the cards say at night, which is the last phase of a round, at night you get paid this much money for this building. So that's really cool to buy the buildings that give you perks at certain points in the game. One of my favorites is the hospital. When you purchase the hospital, it doesn't give you, I don't even think that the hospital gives you many dollars. The whole point is to collect $20, and when you reach $20, you end the game. But when you collect the hospital, I don't even think it gives you any money. I've got to look back at the card. But the hospital, you take it in, and then if the person next to you, to your right or to your left, falls, which means essentially dies in Megaland, or can't, if they get attacked to the point where they don't have any more health, they come back home. So if they fall, you get paid $2. So what you're doing is you're evaluating the risk to the right and to the left of you. Are they really risky people? Are they people who will go out and possibly get injured? I'm going to purchase hospital to gain off of their falls, you know, which is really cool. Machikoro has similar mechanics of, you've got these buildings that you're purchasing, and they give you certain bonuses, and they play off of each other, and there's combos that can be earned. So I think that is where that comparison comes in. It also gets comparisons to Ink and Gold, which is a game that you like. But I don't think it's as risky as Ink and Gold. I think that Ink and Gold has this mechanic where it's like all or nothing, but I don't ever feel, I mean, I've been kicked Megaland, going into Megaland, getting defeated in a round. I've never felt like, oh, I just got knocked down, I can't come back from this. You know, it's always been, well, that was unfortunate. Next time I'm going to work super hard, and I'm going to make sure that I make the right decision. And so, I really like the balance that they have there. And I think it's a better game than Machikoro. Machikoro, we've played a couple times. It never really stuck out, and it's not a game that I've been like, oh, I got to play that one again. But Megaland is a game that I want to play. I want to play this with the kids. I want to play it with Aaron. It plays decently at two players, plays fantastic at four and five. So,
Yeah, I think Machikoro, because it relies on dice, there can be times when, even if you've played better than the other player, they can still win if the dice go their way.
That's right.
If you don't play better than the other players in Megaland, you will lose.
Yeah.
As evidenced by my first time playing this game, I definitely think this was one, because you and I and Aaron and Kendall, or I think it was Kendall played this, and it doesn't... There was something about it where I just feel like you kind of have to play it through once to really kind of completely grasp what's going on. But the game happens really quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, by the end of... But like halfway through the game, I was like, I know what I'm going to do next time we play this. And we played two rounds, and I felt like I did much better. And
the second
time,
you definitely got it. That second time.
And I think, you know, if I was to compare it to Ink and Gold, I think that it does have... Like in Ink and Gold, you know, if you have a bad round, you could still win if you have a really good round. I think this is like if you take Ink and Gold and add some player impact. Like the only thing you're doing in Ink and Gold is pushing your luck. You really don't have any other strategy involved. And some people might want a more complex experience than that. And I think that that's what needs to happen. Because with Mega Land, with the cards coming up and you know what's in that deck, it's actually easier to kind of run through probability if you want to, which I think is helpful for math nerds like me. But, you know, you know what's coming. You know how to make, you know, the choices that you need to make and stuff like that. And so I think it's easier to do in Mega Land than in Ink and Gold. And I think it kind of gives the player a little more control. And so, Ryan, when you're talking about Mega Land and, you know, you've got a bunch of different types of gamers that you've played with, what kind of gamers have really enjoyed this game each time you've brought it out?
So we've played it at lunch a couple times at work, which has gone over really, really well. Like the guys at our lunch table when we were sitting around playing during lunch at work, they loved it. They were like, man, we played it right before its release. So this game is released. The way that you get Mega Land is by going to Target stores. You can go to Target.com and you can order it also. And so that's the only way you're going to get Mega Land. It's a Target exclusive. So we were playing this the week before Target released it at work. And the guys were so excited. They were like, what day does this come out? I've got to check out Target this weekend. I've got to go up there with my family. And so I think it plays fantastic with families. In fact, Kendall, one of the most impressive parts of the game and something I added into the review, you can see a full written review of Mega Land on oneboardfamily.com. But Kendall was so enthralled with the game that she brought the game out. She set it up, came into the living room, and she said, I set up Mega Land, let's play. And this was a rare thing because setting up a game is a little daunting for some kids. Kendall set it up, and then when Emily heard that it was already set up and ready to go, she was like, I'll play. And that's very rare. And so the three of us sat down and played and had such a great time with it. It plays in under 30 minutes. It's definitely a game this is not a game you're going to bring to your gamer group and be like, let's play Mega Land all night long. No. But if you've got a family, if you've got nieces and nephews, if you've got some casual gamers in your life, this is a really great game. Like, there's some push your luck elements, there's some set collection, and I think the replayability of this game is fantastic because you've got over a dozen different variable cards. So you've got your original six cards, and I think there might be 16. I've got to count the number again, and I probably need to update my review online because I'm not sure if I put the right number, but there's about 16 other cards that are included, and you can choose six or seven of these cards based on who you're playing with. And so overall, each game, you're going to have 12 or 13 options of cards that you can purchase, and they're all different. Like that hospital, I think the hospital is one that is a star card, which is, it'll always be out there. The arcade will always be out there. The sandwich stand will always be out there. But then there's other cards like the arena. The arena is a high dollar card that gives you jump abilities. You've got the gym, which is a low value card that gives you jumping abilities, which allow you to jump over a creature if you predict what's coming next. There's a lot of variability with the game. There's even cards that are kind of overpowered, honestly. Josiah found a combo where he was netting $6 every single night. He went from $2 to winning the game handily in four turns because of how he played it. I mean, and we're all just sitting there slowly collecting gold, getting to the end. He just powered through and beat all of us super quick. And so I was like, well, those two buildings should not be out there at the same time. And so I just don't put them out at the same time anymore. But that's what makes Mega Land so fun, because it can change and evolve a little bit each time, because you can just say, oh, I know how this person plays. I'm going to choose a different card to put out there. This way you can force other people to try different strategies, which is really enjoyable.
Right. And I think the fact that it's It's got some buildings that are there every time, so you yep. kind of know, like, you might have a base strategy, and then it adjusts. I mean, the same thing happens with Dominion. You know, yes. it, with Dominion, there aren't not necessarily a base set, but, you know, it's the same mechanics. It's just you have to change your play style based on what cards end up out there.
Yeah.
So I think that is good for... It's kind of like we were talking about with... I can't remember what game we were talking about earlier, but where you... With Charterstone. Where Charterstone, you are learning some new rules each time. So each playthrough, it's like having a new game experience, which is something that a lot of players value, like having feeling like you're doing something new, but you're still using a base set of rules. I think Megaland does the same thing. You've got this base set of rules, and it changes just each a little bit each time, so it feels like you're playing a brand new game. I do also love that you mentioned that Emily played this game. I think we need to have the Emily seal of approval, because if we can get Emily out there to the table, I think that says a lot about the accessibility of a game for somebody that maybe doesn't, you know, play games quite as much as you and I. And Megaland, I think, definitely has that.
Yeah, that is an awesome idea, actually, the Emily seal of approval. I might actually talk to her about that if she would be willing to, like, do one of those, do a little segment or something, like, what were your thoughts? Cool. Yes or no? Because yeah. she's very discerning. Like, she wants something that takes a small amount of time, something that's fun and engaging, and she's not going to lose interest. So that's a really good idea, actually. So awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, Ryan, if you were to, you know, say any kind of things about Megaland that maybe weren't your favorite, like, what would be some of the things that maybe certain types of gamers would want to kind of avoid this game?
It's going to be too light for some people. Some people just don't like pressure luck games because they feel like they're penalized unjustly. But I think that there's enough, like most pressure luck games, you know the odds, and so you can adjust accordingly. And if you hate pressure luck games, this is not going to change your mind. If you're looking for a heavier game, go to Near and Far. Go to, you know, some of Ryan Lockett's heavier games, because the illustrations are still beautiful and you're going to have a deeper experience. But if you are looking for a game that's family friendly, something that will be enjoyable by casual gamers, Megaland is right on point and very impressive. So
awesome, Ryan. Well, thank you for kind of bringing us some information about this game. I think Megaland is one that a lot of people that check out our stuff would be interested in. So if you yeah. are interested in this game, again, it is a Target exclusive, so you can head to your local Target, or you can check out Target.com to get that game. Hashtag not a sponsor. Hashtag we would like you to be a sponsor. Hashtag bullseyes for days. Hashtag Target give us money.
We talk about Target a lot. I think it's because they are a big box retailer that everybody has access to here in the U.S., and they have some great games. So I do feel like Target needs to do something here.
Yeah. Like, at least give me, like, an express checkout line that I can go through.
There we
something.
Go. You have that a, would be nice. You have a special card that gets you checked out quicker. Sweet. Cool. Rick, people can find us at oneboardfamily.com on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all at oneboardfamily.com. And yeah, come visit us. Come see what we're reviewing. If you like what you're hearing, why don't you think about being a Patreon donor? Patreon is a platform that allows people to give money to content creators, and we are using those funds to allow us to upgrade some equipment. We're doing new things. There are games that we would love to review for our audience, and honestly, games are expensive. So we're using some of those Patreon dollars to offset the cost of games. And we're also trying to go in 2019, we're going to try to go to two or three conventions. And so those Patreon dollars go to make that available so that we can cover these conferences for you, the viewers and listeners. So consider it patreon.com/oneboardfamily.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining me this week. And if you want more, again, also subscribe to this podcast and like it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, make sure you check out our other podcast, Will It Game? We've done a few episodes of that. And Ryan is beating me, and you need to help that to stop happening.
That's such a fun podcast, man. I really enjoy doing that.
Yes, if you would like to laugh with us, I think we're actually funny on that one as opposed to whatever we're trying to do here. So you can check out that podcast. And if just by subscribing, it's in the same channel, so you'll get that one right there in your feed. But Ryan, until next time, we will see you at the table.
Punchboard Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.